Thank you, Lane said. Then he sat forward, newly energized. He turned to face Reacher directly. Almost the first thing you ever said in this room was that these guys of mine could start a war against them, but first we had to find them. Do you remember that? Reacher nodded. So find them. Reacher detoured via the master bedroom and picked up the framed photograph from the desk, the inferior print, the one with jade in it. He held it carefully so as not to smudge the glass, looked at it long and hard. For you, he thought. For both of you, not for him. Then he put the photograph back and walked quietly out of the apartment. Seek and destroy. He started at the same payphone he had used before, took the card out of his shoe and dialed Lauren Pauling's cell, said, It's real this time, and they're not coming back. She said,
Can you be at the United Nations in half an hour?
Chapter 28 Reacher couldn't get close to the UN building's entrance because of security, but he saw Lauren Pauling waiting for him in the middle of the First Avenue sidewalk. Clearly, she had the same problem. No pass, no clearance, no magic words. She had a printed scarf around her shoulders. She looked good. She was 10 years older than him, but he liked what he saw. He started toward her, and then she saw him, and they met in the middle. I called in a favor, she said. We're meeting with an army officer from the Pentagon who liaises with one of the UN committees.
On what subject?
Mercenaries. We're supposed to be against them. We signed all kinds of treaties.
The Pentagon loves mercenaries. It employs them all the time.
But it likes them to go where it sends them. It doesn't like them to fill their downtime with unauthorized sideshows.
Is that where they lost Knight in Hobart? On a sideshow?
Somewhere in Africa, Pauling said.
Does this guy have the details?
Some of them. He's reasonably senior, but he's new. He's not going to tell you his name, and you're not allowed to ask. Deal?
Does he know my name?
I didn't tell him.
Okay, that sounds fair.
Then her cell phone chimed. She answered it and listened and looked around. He's in the plaza. He can see us, but he doesn't want to walk right up to us. We have to go to a coffee shop on 2nd. He'll follow. The coffee shop was one of those mostly brown places that survive on equal parts counter trade, booth trade, and to-go coffee in cardboard cups with Greek decoration on them. Pauling led Reacher to a booth all the way in back and sat so that she could watch the door. Reacher slid in next to her. He never sat any other way than with his back to a wall. Long habit, even in a place with plenty of mirrors, which the coffee shop had. They were tinted bronze and made the narrow unit look wide, made everyone look tan, like they were just back from the beach. Pauling waved to the waitress and mouthed coffee and held up 3 fingers. The waitress came over and dumped 3 heavy brown mugs on the table and filled them from a bun flask. Reacher took a sip, hot, strong, and generic. He made the Pentagon guy before he was even in through the door. There was no doubt about what he was. Army, but not necessarily a fighting man, maybe just a bureaucrat. Dull, not old, not young, corn-colored buzz-cut, cheap blue wool suit, white broadcloth button-down shirt, striped tie, good shoes polished to a mirror's shine. A different kind of uniform. It was the kind of outfit a captain or a major would wear to his sister-in-law's 2nd wedding. Maybe this guy had bought it for that very purpose, long before a spell of resume-building, temporary detached duty in New York City appeared in his future. The guy paused inside the door and looked around. Not looking for us, Reacher thought. Looking for anyone else who knows him. If he sees somebody, he'll fake a phone call and turn around and leave. Doesn't want any awkward questions later. He's not so dumb after all. Then he thought, Pauling's not so dumb either. She knows people who can get in trouble just by being seen with the wrong folks. But the guy evidently saw nothing to worry about. He walked on back and slid in opposite Pauling and Reacher, and after a brief glance at each of their faces, he centered his gaze between their heads and kept his eyes on the mirror. Up close, Reacher saw that he was wearing a black, subdued order, crossed pistols lapel pin, and that he had mild scarring on one side of his face. Maybe grenade or IED shrapnel at maximum range. Maybe he had been a fighting man. Or maybe it was a childhood shotgun accident.
I don't have much for you, the guy said. Private enterprise Americans fighting overseas are rightly considered to be very bad news, especially when they go fight in Africa. So this stuff is very compartmentalized and need to know, and it was before my time, so I simply don't know very much about it. So all I can give you is what you can probably guess anyway. Where was it? Reacher asked. I'm not even sure of that. Burkina Faso or Mali, I think. One of those small West African places. Frankly, there are so many of them in trouble, it's hard to keep track. It was the usual deal. Civil war, a scared government, a bunch of rebels ready to come out of the jungle, an unreliable military. So the government pays through the nose and buys what protection it can on the international market. Does one of those countries speak French? Is there official language? Both of them. Why? I saw some of the money in plastic wrap printed in French. Banque Centrale. Central Bank. How much? More than you or I would earn in two lifetimes. U.S. dollars? Reacher nodded. Lots of them. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Did it work this time? No. The story that did the rounds is that Edward Lane took the money and ran. Can't blame them for running, I guess. They were hopelessly outnumbered and strategically weak. But not everyone got out. The guy nodded. It seemed that way. But getting information out of those places is like trying to get a radio signal from the dark side of the moon. It's mostly silence and static. And when it isn't, it's faint and garbled. So usually we rely on the Red Cross or Doctors Without Frontiers. And eventually we got a solid report that two Americans had been captured. A year later we got names. It was Knight and Hobart, recon Marines back in the day. Mixed records. It surprises me that they stayed alive. The rebels won. They became the new government. They emptied the jails because the jails were full of their buddies. But a government needs full jails to keep the population scared. So the old good guys became the new bad guys. Anyone who had worked for the old regime was suddenly in big trouble. And a couple of Americans were like trophies. So they were kept alive. But they suffered very cruelly. The Doctors Without Frontiers report was horrific. Appalling. Mutilation for sport was a fact of life. Details? I guess there are lots of bad things a man can do with a knife. You didn't think about a rescue attempt? You're not listening. The State Department can't admit that there are bunches of renegade American mercenaries running wild in Africa. And like I told you, the rebels became the new government. They're in charge now. We have to be nice to them. Because all those places have got stuff that we want. There's oil and diamonds and uranium. Alcoa needs tin and bauxite and copper. Halliburton wants to get in there and make a buck. Corporations from Texas want to get in there and run those same damn jails.